This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Ruslan, this week we have, who do I go with first? We have the returns of actor and filmmaker Na'ar Murad.
Hi, thanks again for having me.
Yeah, great. And we have also the return of actor, filmmaker, author of Once We Were There and the brains behind the Georgetown Literary Festival, and a person who's having her microphone stand moved around, Bernice Chorley.
Hello.
Hi, Bernice. And our three topics this week are: topic number one is art versus history. Topic number two is what makes a good photograph. And finally, topic number three is why we need an arts council. So, topic number one.
So I just get into it? Okay. I recently did, for the second time, we did it first time in 2016, a Malay adaptation of Macbeth called Datuk Sri at KL Pack. It's, of course, very political because it's Macbeth. It's set in a kind of fictitious Malaysia, so a lot of it is relatable.
And it's in Malay. It's in Malay.
It's in Malay. It's in very like classical Melayu, you know, like very hard to remember your lines because it's not the kind of Malay you use every day. But anyway, like 1 or 2 weeks into rehearsal, they decided that infamous 9th Wednesday, voting day, right? And we were like, that is our full dress day. And then that means for the next few days, Malaysia may be in turmoil for all we know. And we had no idea it was going to be so positive, right? So already we were very nervous. People were worried and everything. And come full dress rehearsal, we invited people to come and watch the full dress rehearsal. We were sold out a month before the show started.
Wow.
It was a record-breaking thing. Mm. And there we were doing our full dress. And, well, basically, you know, the votes were coming in, right? And people would be doing this intense scene and running off and turning on their phone and going, 93, 75. And the focus was completely off. There was this sense of urgency, which was different. So the director was going like, you were doing a different version of Datuk Sri. And then the next day, when Dr. M was being sworn in, right, somebody had a big phone and we had the live feed of him being sworn in. So there we were.
Does it happen at 9:30 or something?
Yeah, 9:30. Yeah. So we were there during the intermission and everybody was watching him being sworn in. And then this huge cheer went up. And then we were like, yeah, okay, great. Let's get back to work. And suddenly we had this larger cheer from the audience who had started to come in. And they were whooping and screaming for the rest of the evening. I mean, I emphasized one of my lines, which was like, segala yang kau telah rampas, takkan kekal selamanya. And I got this cheer for that line, which wasn't supposed to have a cheer. It was a very, you know, angsty monologue, but they were like, oh, yes, he's talking about, you know, GB. So for the next few days, people would laugh at lines which were not meant to be funny. Mm. Two characters, the princes, Duncan's sons, right, in the original play, had to run for their lives, of course, because Macbeth was, you know, probably the murderer of the king. So they were going like, mari kita lari ke Kalimantan, or something like that. And everybody just started, because that was the very day which Najib tried this attempted escape to.
Right.
And so aside from the fact that everything feels very different now, right? The way people talk to each other. And for the next few days, I would have strange conversations with strangers and stuff like that. But that night was crazy because we were trying to perform. We were trying to do art live. And of course, our issue was, it was a political play. Mm-hmm. But to actually have it happen then and just feel everything just, you know, like completely, we had a different director, let's put it that way. Our director said, I give up. You're being directed by history, by the audience and by what was going on, you know? And it was a very interesting thing.
That's amazing.
I thought, yeah.
It was put on once before, quite a long time ago.
To 2016.
2016, yes. Okay. Yeah. And then it would have been created in the light of a previous, I don't want to call it regime, a previous government.
Yes.
Which had its own ways of governing people.
And it was right in the middle of that. At that point, you know, elections were so far away, people didn't think of it. You know,
And the story with Macbeth is a violent usurpation of power. It's violent,
exactly.
Very violent.
Yeah.
But there's a new regime in Macbeth, which doesn't end well. So it's not a happy ending.
Yeah. It's like the responsibility of power. Like, once you have the power, when do you stop? You've already done something that you shouldn't have. In the name of being a better king. But then, are you a better king? Yeah. Are you really a better king?
And Bernice, has history interfered with art for you?
I think we need to make art out of this historic moment. You know, I think we need to do that. And how we're going to do that is, remains to be seen.
Yeah. You know, another thing, did you guys notice that I'm in a bit of shock because for the first time in my life, I'm getting a bipartisan political analysis in Bahasa Malaysia. That's never happened in my lifetime. Mm. It's usually one side or the other.
Yeah.
And watching Awani and all that, my brain can't take it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that my brain can't take either.
Yeah.
But I mean, talking about art and history, I think in 1998, when Anwar was arrested, I think the arts community came together and formed Artist Proactive. And we had a festival and we voiced our anger and our dissent and things like that. So we did create something 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago. So
a lot of stuff was happening during that particular Reformasi period. Mm-hmm. Was also very, very... ICT got banned several times, which is great, which means we were doing our job right.
Yeah.
ICT being an instant cafe. I personally, I'm obviously very happy for the nation, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think that on a personal level, art versus history, that I've trained myself far too much to be thinking artistically in a very different set of circumstances than now.
Mm.
And that the freedoms of now are not necessarily built for the likes of me. I think young people coming along will be able to be free to do whatever they want, just the way it should be, as opposed to...
Why not you?
Well... It's going to take a bit of time anyway to find different contexts. But if, let's say, Datuk Sri was being put on 3 weeks after the election, i.e. now,
it'd be a
different thing again.
A different thing. Mm. It would still be very positive, I think, but very different. Very
different. Yeah.
And it might even imply that we are actually being opposition now. And we are saying that, you know, like the takeover could be hostile for all we know behind the scenes.
But
of course, we're not saying that.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll move on then to topic number two.
Which is you.
Which is what makes good photography. Now, one of the aspects of the recent election that I've noticed, it really struck me, was like I kept looking at the internet and actually in newspapers and the such, and I was thinking, some of these photographs are really good.
Mm.
There's some really great photography coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And also photo editing on the part of the newspaper editors, the choices they're making, the cropping they're making, etc. So, for instance, the Star newspaper, of all people, I think has been showing some good photography. Mm-hmm. There was one front page just a short while ago of Amar Singh, the chief of police, holding a press conference. And I was just thinking, that's just a really good photograph.
Mm-hmm.
He looked official. I mean, it was this sort of physical action.
He also has a great face.
Great face. I mean, it's almost like Hollywood casting, isn't it?
Exactly. I've got to let Punjabi Bernice off the leash here for one second to be a bit of a fangirl. Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's just one example. And I'm thinking back to, I mean, so Bernice, one of your incarnations is as a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Na'a and I, both filmmakers. Yeah. But I have back
loved
in the...
photography when we were younger.
Right? Yeah, but I back in the day, I used to try to take photographs and I'd look at the results and I'd go, that's not a good photograph. I wasn't good at it. And I guess I'm talking about photojournalism, not fashion photography, which is kind of like, you know, whatever, who cares. But
candid photography, slice of life photography.
What do you mean it wasn't good? I mean, what is not good? Well, define not good.
I think that, well, not good and good come together. I think that I've sort of realized that with candid photography, photojournalism, is that the audience knows when the photographer has made the effort to step closer,
mm-hmm.
to step into a position that we would ordinarily not choose to go to. It's uncomfortable. It's physically dangerous, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
but also the proximity to your subject. It is deliberately invading their space.
It's access, yes.
Yeah, and it's not something I'm prepared to do.
Mm.
But also the audience realize, even if they don't know the technicalities, they can tell if it's on a long lens, whereby the photographer is very far away, but a very long lens. Mm-hmm. You can see the graininess. But if there's a clarity in the image, then you know the photographer's gotten closer. I think that's one of the things that helps make a good photograph. I mean, Bernice, you know, you've taken photographs.
Yeah, well, and access, you know, it's putting yourself in a situation where you're either on the floor or you're tilting your lens at a different angle, or, you know, it's the point of view. I think that's very important. And yes, photojournalism is, in this day and age, a very valid art form. There are competitions. You have the World Press Photo Award. But again, it's what makes a good photograph. You know, why is Amar Singh captured so well in that particular photograph? Because it's an active shot. It's not a passive shot. I mean, you have characters, your subjects are doing something interesting. There's movement in the face. There's movement in the body. And it's also composition. I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's good composition.
Right.
It's capturing the mise-en-scène in those four lines, in the image, and not crossing the fourth wall.
Mm.
Every smartphone now has a decent camera. I mean, I use a Huawei, which has a Leica lens, which is a fantastic lens. But again, you know, because I was so trained to use a Nikon, to use a film camera, I still shoot on film. So the sheer holding of the camera on the phone is a completely new thing for me because I still can't get it right. My daughter keeps saying to me, Mama, you're not holding it right.
Yeah, I can't do a selfie. You know,
how do I do this? It's so complicated. So I guess it's learning a new set of skills. pointing and shooting is easier than ever now, and then of course you can edit. But as a purist, I think really it's the fundamentals of what makes a good photograph. Mm. It's subject, it's composition, it's depth of field, how far you are from the subject, and so on and so forth.
I think it's also technical advantages. I mean, all three of us, we used to shoot in film, and when you've got 24 or 36 in your camera, you really pick and chose what you wanted to shoot, and you sometimes couldn't get it. Mm-hmm. But now with digital, you just shoot and shoot and shoot, and I find doing that with my phone, and when I look at the 300 photographs I've taken of maybe just a child's birthday party, there'll be three accidental beautiful ones because you are just, you don't have to think about it, you don't have much, it's all autofocus, you don't have to think about how much money you're spending because, you know, you're not changing rolls of film. Mm-hmm. So the technology has made it a bit simpler, I think.
I do feel that both of you are talking in quite technical terms. I think that I had, for instance, a while back, a birthday party. You were both there, I believe. And a friend of ours was taking photographs, and he didn't announce himself as being the photographer, but he just was taking photographs. And when I saw the photographs that he'd taken, I was immediately struck by, this guy's a really good photographer. He'd been silent. I'd barely noticed him the whole night. But he had enough wisdom to find the truth in people that he didn't even know. For me, it's that. So there's composition, et cetera. That's important. But it's waiting
for the moment and finding
the juxtapositions that speak a truth.
As Cartier-Bresson says, you know, it's the decisive moment. It's that moment before you click. That's really important. Yeah. But also, again, you know,
Cartier-Bresson is the guy who made the handbags and stuff, right?
No, but as with any good art, I mean, a photograph is a piece of art and it has to hit you in the gut. You just go like, wow. You know, the wow factor has to be there.
And it's also being invisible, I think. With your friend, people knew he was there, but people didn't care that he was taking pictures anymore. So you got honesty there. You didn't have people thinking, like, oh, there's a photographer. I'm going to hold my glass in a certain way. And also, I think even if you're not a friend of whoever, you have to learn how to be invisible and not interfere somehow.
You know? Well, I'll conclude by saying that, so not on you and I filmmaking backgrounds, that I can compose very well for film, because it's a narrative that I'm in control of, in fact, I must control. I must make decisions on the priorities of who should be foreground, background, etc.
And you have a DOP improving every shot as you go along.
Exactly. So I don't need to know my f-stop from my elbow. But if I'm given the freedom of the natural world, I'm a really bad photographer. I mean, I can do it on a really wide lens. But if you ask me to go and take photographs of people, it just falls apart.
Yeah, I love taking photographs of people. I mean, portraiture. But it's practice. It's really just practice.
Can you imagine nature photography?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the kind of bird watchers. My goodness, it's crazy. But again, with taking photos of people, it's access and getting them to trust you, because you can't just stick your lens in front of a stranger and say, can I take a photograph of you? So it's trusting the subject, getting them to trust you, and then you as the photographer capturing that truth in that person. So it's a lot of work. It's practice. It's understanding your tools. And then hoping and wishing that you get at least three decent photographs out of a roll of film.
So in conclusion, though, new technology, these handphones, can you do it on that?
I think you can, and it has been done. It's just, you know, it's learning a craft. It's learning how to use a tool from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm beginning to get good photographs with it. Like you, I do know how to, well, my thumb will be there and it'll be like, you know, Dutch angles and everything.
Oh, old people. I'm sorry, listeners. I'm sorry. You have to put up with
this. And there's so many things. There's so many gizmos you can like slide this here and press that there. And you know what I mean?
Filters.
Yeah, you can have the thing, the handheld, the thing.
Yeah. And you can like put funny noses on people.
No, that's just wrong.
So, but in a moment though, we're going to be talking here on A Bit of Culture about the Arts Council.
Why we need one
here on Bit of Culture 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Na'a Murad, and Bernice Chorley. And now, Bernice, the Arts Council, what is and why do we need?
Well, I think one of the most important things about a democratic society or having a functioning democracy is that you value the arts. I mean, culture is just good for us. You know, you go to the ballet, you feel better. It's like you get an emotional workout. Culture is necessary. And I think, you know, Malaysia has one of the most diverse cultural traditions in Southeast Asia. And it's time that we finally had an arts council so that we can have strategies in place to protect our art galleries, our museums, our libraries, our cultural institutions, spaces. Because, you know, to be honest, it's a bit of a mess at the moment.
Restore films, old films.
Yes, and, you know, to have a decent film festival, like an international film festival, to do things right. To have platforms where artists can apply for grants, for travel, if they want to support a particular project. In the UK, the Arts Council is supported by the National Lottery. We can do that. You know, it's amazing when you see films supported by the National Lottery. And it's managing public funding, working with the government, but keeping them at arm's length so they don't get involved so much. So the Arts Council needs to be independent. It needs to have a combination of public and government funds. And then to have a core group of people who really understand what this country needs.
Right, not arts. Political appointees, but people who have worked in the arts.
Hey, people who are practitioners, people who are filmmakers, visual artists, writers, poets.
Hey, I think I nominate me.
All three of us could be honest.
Why not?
Hey, got four of us.
Bernice, there is the UK model.
Yes.
Which I'm familiar with. The funding for which has gone down and down and down.
Mm-hmm.
But still, nonetheless, pretty much every theatre production that's on in London or around the country is subsidised to the tune of, I don't know, at least 80% by the Arts Council, the museums, etc. It's a lot of government involvement.
Mm-hmm.
Britain is, even post-Brexit, although its economy is going to decline, it's still a pretty wealthy country. I mean, is that not something that they can afford and make a priority? Is it something that we Malaysia can afford?
I think it's transforming the city. You know, London is a cultural center. The millions of pounds that London makes from culture is astonishing. And they know this. They know that London has to, in spite of Brexit, has to remain a cultural center, one of the great cultural centers of the world. We can do this with
really?
KL.
Kuala Lumpur?
Yes, we can. I mean, you know, it's at the moment, I think everything is just in shambles. The National Art Gallery is a complete, you know, it's leaking. You know, of course, we have the issue of censorship, which, again, is a very, very important issue. How do we deal with freedom of speech, of, you know, of creativity, when we've never really had it?
No.
What does it mean? And everyone has a different notion of freedom.
We don't even know where to start to
negotiate. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work that needs to be done. But I think it is time. And if Anwar is talking about a golden age, presumably of culture, arts and culture, then it has to start somewhere. We'll give him the golden age. We'll give him the work. Uh-huh. But you just have to create structures that exist.
I just think that maybe the goal, like Cam was starting to say, the goal of turning KL into a cultural, international culture, is a bit further away from maybe getting Malaysians or KLites to begin with, or Malaysians in general, to just realize that we have all this.
Yes.
And to start going to galleries and start watching Wayang Kulit again. Mm-hmm. Or you know.
And, you know, and kids can learn and realize that there is money in culture, that I can be an artist. I can sustain myself. I can be a filmmaker.
That's right.
And sustain
puppets,
myself.
Puppets, whatever.
Exactly.
Everything you're listing more and more things, and I'm just seeing the dollar signs ping, 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 ping.
Yeah.
I mean, ballpark figure, what kind of money are you talking about here?
What to start off with?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look at Chindano. I mean, what was the seed funding for that?
I don't know.
Yeah,
there's 114 million ringgit floating around in different
but
bills.
But I mean, for so many, you know, after every general election and after every budget, you know, you'd hear the minister say, "Oh, there's 25 million for the arts." Mm-hmm. Where is that money gone?
I have actually been in a situation where it was a show by a local theatre company. And the Minister of Arts at that time, who will not be named because let's not drag him into it, was boasting about how much money. And he made the mistake of doing it in front of Elizabeth Cardosa, Marion de Cruz, and Pia Zain. And of course, all three of them descended on him and said, like, "Oh, yes, we do want the money. What do we do?" And said minister just sort of hemmed and hawed and said, "Oh, call my so-and-so," and just walked away.
Yeah.
Because he was just boasting.
Yeah.
And yet there wasn't really a mechanism, I think, for really giving this money out.
And because if you did want to, let's say, you know, mount a musical about Tunku Abdul Rahman, of course you'd get the money.
You get the money.
Because, you know, it's about nationhood, nation building, propaganda to a certain extent. What I'm saying is that you can have those
nation
kinds
building
of,
kind of thing.
Yeah. But also you have to look at the alternatives. There's so many different narratives in Malaysia that have not yet been told.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I hope we're not just talking about the Klang Valley and KL.
Yes, of course.
It's the whole country.
Because it's
Malaysia, you know, Sabah and Sarawak, they have
incredible
traditions,
stuff,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's to revive these traditions as well, to document, to revive.
I mean, there's two definitions, it seems, of nation building. Mm. One is actually, to me, the false one is if you do something patriotic, that is considered nation building. No, that's just, I think, patronage.
Because nation building has had such a bad name.
It's what you're talking about.
Yes.
It's the long term.
It's been corrupted by, you know.
Well, yeah, perhaps it's nation living as opposed to nation building. Because that's very deterministic is nation building. Building toward what? Who's the architect of
this? So that's the heritage part of the Arts Council. But I think Malaysians need to understand that art and culture is good for you. It makes your life better.
I agree entirely. Absolutely. But I hope that the people who, some of the people who really need to hear that are rich people and companies. Because one of the things that happened when trying to go around and get companies to give money was they were just so scared of the government.
Yeah.
They were too petrified to be seen to be going against the government. Even if it was just, you know, $10,000 to go toward a theater production. And I would really hope that this is now a wake-up call.
Absolutely.
To these companies who have the kind of funds that could be
and
so important.
And individuals. I mean, patronage. You know, the Italian Renaissance was funded by rich people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know?
You guys were saying about how London is, they've got the lottery and all that kind of stuff. But New York, it's a lot of
course,
money goes,
the
comes from.
The Rockefellers and the Ford Foundations.
And even people you haven't heard of. Just,
yeah,
they,
you know, these
just
private.
Throwing,
yeah, absolutely. The Renaissance. In the case of the Renaissance, when a big piece of art went up, the people who were recognized was, who paid for that?
Yes, absolutely. The Medicis.
The Medicis. It's like Leonardo was just this guy in the background. Who cared about him? No, it's the Medicis who were the important ones.
Well, we were talking about this the other day. Even Shakespeare. I mean, he had patrons up the kazoo.
And it's just, you know, it's you got to give back. I mean, how much money do you need? How many handbags do you need? Do you know what I mean? It's really about preserving this culture, re-energizing it, re-engaging with artists. And I think we need to do this. Otherwise, we have already lost so much. We have already lost so many brilliant masters of tradition, like Padola, you know, whose life, he died a pauper, you know. And
so
we
many
need
of
to
them.
Celebrate our artists, our filmmakers. We need decent festivals. We need to become, you know, a leader of culture in Southeast Asia. And that's it's really that, plain and simple.
Yeah. Okay. You heard it here, folks. Yeah. And if you did it, you knew it before. So Arts Council, I'm all on board. We now, though, move on to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest, and Na'am Murad goes first.
And I just thought of mine, thanks to Bernice, restoring old films. Mm. I'm speaking now to the younger generation who probably only know P. Ramlee, maybe a few things. I'd like you to go on, you can go to YouTube and look for Hussein Hanif's Dua Pendeka. It's very easy to remember. Dua Pendeka. You get the whole film on YouTube. And when you watch it, you will not believe what you're seeing. You wouldn't think, after all those studio-bound films, it's partly studio-bound, that you consider the history of Malaysian films. Hussein Hanif was Malaysia's Kurosawa, or Sergio Leone. He used landscapes. He used very dramatic. His films were very serious. They were about warriors and, you know, the Malaysian version of samurai dramas, and they were wonderful to watch. You may find it, the acting, a bit old school, but you will just watch it for as long as you can. And I bet you that after 15 minutes, you won't be able to tear your eyes away. Dua Pendeka on YouTube.
Okay.
Okay.
So my recommendation, I was going to recommend one thing, but I'm going to change it now because of what Bernice was saying.
You see, Bernice, how you influence us.
Because Bernice was talking about preserving and how, yes, we need, you know, I think it would be nice for government, federal and state, to get involved. But let's applaud the people who have been doing this themselves anyway, who've been making the effort. And I'd like to thank sincerely Paul Augustine of Penang and the Penang House of Music.
Yes, which is amazing.
Which is amazing.
Amazing.
And he and his friends have taken upon themselves to really catalogue, archive, research, preserve the Penang and the Northern Malaya music scene. And they've created, with the thanks, I guess, of the Penang state government, I should imagine.
And also private funding.
Private funding as
Yes,
well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have not actually yet visited. I've only seen, you know, virtual tours and stuff.
On the internet, is there a website we can get samples of stuff?
Yes, there is. But it's really, I was just there a few weeks ago, and it's extraordinary.
Oh, cool.
Really,
yeah.
It's quite amazing, yeah.
So, you know, and Paul Augustine and his friends is one, but there are other people who've been doing work as well, and they don't spring to my mind as much as he does. So, yeah, Penang House of Music. Go visit next time you're there. Bernice, what's yours?
Well, I've got so many things I want to recommend, but so, as you know, I watch a lot of film, and currently, I think there's some very, very good stuff being produced by the BBC and Showtime, which involves adaptations of books written by British authors. So the first one I'd like to recommend is Patrick Melrose, written by Edward Saint-Aubin.
Edward who?
Edward Saint-Aubin.
Saint-Aubin.
Oh, okay.
Sort of based on five books, sort of semi-autobiographical. Patrick Melrose is brought to you by the BBC. I think it's adapted by David Nichols, directed by Stephen Frears. So very,
oh, nice.
But Benedict Cumberbatch is just amazing.
Isn't he always?
He is absolutely amazing playing Patrick Melrose. It's very, very good. So watch that. The second one I'd like to recommend is called Killing Eve, based on a series of sort of novels written by, I can't remember who now, but adapted by... Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who created Fleabag.
Yeah. There's another British thing.
Another British thing, but it's...
The voice of the robot in Solo.
Yeah, in L3.
For the kids.
That's right,
yeah.
That's right. yes. Jodie Comer plays a female assassin, and Sandra Oh,
yeah,
well. From Grey's Anatomy, plays this police officer who's hell-bent on trying to, you know, capture this woman. But it's unlike any kind of spy thriller that you've ever seen. Because
Hollywood
it's,
stuff.
Yeah, it's really... It's about female relationships. It's about... characterization, which is so kind of peculiar and odd and kind of really, it just kind of gets under your skin. It's brilliant stuff. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is phenomenal. I think she's a phenomenal actress and now a phenomenal, you know, TV writer.
I like it when the British do that kind of thing.
Yeah,
They do turn it on its head. Do you ever watch Fleabag, by the way?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did. Yeah? I did.
No.
You just check it out now. It's incredibly rude.
It's very rude, yes. It's very rude, yeah. But the other third, the third
one.
Oh,
there's a third recommendation?
Yes, sorry. Very
good. Pieces of paper.
Yeah, I know. It's a very English scandal based on the books written by, well, the biography written by Jeremy Thorpe. Hugh Grant plays Jeremy Thorpe.
Oh, okay.
This Lib Dem, you know, leader from the 70s and 80s. And it's about, you know, the unraveling of his homosexual affair.
Right.
Okay.
Hugh Grant is brilliant.
Okay.
He's sleazy. He's this kind of like maudlin character. And you just think, my God.
I like him now better than... Yeah.
Why did it take him so long to get a role like this? So he's very, very, very good in it.
He's just much older and not a pretty boy anymore.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, Bernice, why did another recommendation last year here? not only did Na'ana change our recommendations because of you,
sorry.
You've done that three.
Maybe our producer has a recommendation based on something that
Bernice... Yeah, producer Ali Jonian. Okay, so that's three recommendations from Bernice, which is basically go check out
Patrick Melrose.
British drama.
Well,
all right.
Yeah.
Patrick Melrose, very English.
Killing Eve and A Very English Affair.
Okay.
A Very English Scandal, sorry. Very right. English Scandal.
So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains for me to thank special honored guest Bernice Chorley.
Thank you.
And special honored guest Na'am Murad.
Terima kasih. Salam Malaysia Baru.
Oh, my goodness. And myself, Cam Raslan. You can get in touch with each of these people on Twitter, by the way. Are you Bernice?
Yes, I am not as active as you are. Sorry.
All right. Well, not as Mr. Active on Twitter.
Sometimes.
No, he is. He is the
more than you.
Yeah, but Na'am Murad, at Na'am Murad, is the most active person I know on Twitter.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and going on to BFM News, which is now like one of my favorite places to get news.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And so, thank you, and join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.